It was Ben Sweetland who said, "We cannot hold a torch to light another's path without brightening our own." Well, in the case of veteran broadcaster, author, and spiritual explorer Wendy Garrett, it was the flicker of a nightlight that opened up her path and led her on a journey that has forever changed her life. In her book, Talking to Nightlights, Wendy documents her adventure of learning to channel messages from a source she simply calls the energy. It was Wendy's unconditional desire to understand our connection to this vast universe that led her down a winding road of learning and enlightenment, and ultimately a sense of acceptance that we are forever linked to the multitude of energy that surrounds us at all times. Wendy, today we're going to play role reversal. Just weeks ago, a few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of being on your great show, Conscious Living, which is part of the Empowerment Radio Network. And we had, shall we say, quite a curious incident take place during the course of our conversation. So I want to set this up for our listening audience so we can then segue into a discussion about a process called channeling. And it's a process that you're quite adept at. So here's the deal. As you know, we were going into a commercial break during your show and about to discuss the phenomenon of animal reincarnation, which is a subject that I cover in my book, Conscious Musings. And this topic, just a little tidbit, the topic is based on an experience that I had with my now former cat, Paws, who I feel has been reincarnated as my new kitty named Clover Paws. Actually, two very curious things occurred during this little time period during our show. First, the initial spot that aired was about a technology that will allow you to find your lost cat. Interesting. So that in and of itself, shall we say, was curious. But then after what we in the broadcasting biz call a stop set, after that had ended, you had remarked about the synchronicity of the commercial and what we were about to talk about, essentially how I found my lost cat. And then, Wendy, you said the following, "I don't know, Enid, is it synchronicity?" Now, I want to stop there for a second to let our listening audience know most of you do not know, probably none of you, that my first name is Enid. My middle name is Alexis. I've been going by Alexis since the broadcasting biz, actually since I was about 19. I don't know, Wendy, whether you realize what was happening or not. Of course, I had emailed you. I listened to the show probably a half a dozen times to make sure I was hearing what I thought I was hearing. And indeed, you said, "I don't know, Enid, is it synchronicity?" Well, needless to say, everyone, this spawned a lot of curiosity for me. So I immediately contacted you, Wendy, and I said, "Okay, what's going on here?" And there's something going on here. I learned another side of you, that you indeed are not only a brilliant radio broadcaster, but you're a channel. And so I wanted to talk about this amazing journey that you took to jumpstart your work as a conscious channel. And it's very well documented in your book, Talking to Nightlights. So maybe we can start with that now that I've given this long intro about how nightlights triggered this journey for you.
I am so humbled. I really appreciate the way you're putting this together, and I appreciate your thoughts and the way that it's resonated for you, because as a person who's got a story to tell, the only thing you can do is put it out there and hope that maybe somebody connects and that it reaches people. And I didn't know I had a story, because I was just normally, like you, a broadcaster, journalist, reporter. I was exploring other people's stories, right. And that was what I did. And when this event happened for me, I was in between jobs. I'd been doing my whole path, career path, for, I don't know, at that point, probably diligently for at least 10 years, and beyond that, hoping something was going to click, mm-hmm. and learning how to tell a story, how to write, how to create, what to pick up on, and what might spark an interest in the listener. And so that was what I was doing. In the meantime, we were doing rehabbing a house, and there was this big, old, beautiful house that happened to be the home as we went through. It was in real disrepair. The home of a minister, and it's right down the street from a church, and so it had this wonderful energy under all of the debris and the just this the trash. and so as we're redoing this, I noticed we had finished, for the most part, everything was all finished. And I had, for quite some time, been aware that I journaled and I wrote, and that I had been doing that. I've got pictures when I was a teenager of me writing down by the creek. I lived in the country. I would take my journal down there and I would write. I don't know what I wrote. I was quite entertaining for me at the time. I know at some point I was writing stories. Yeah. I was going to, at one point in eighth grade, I was going to be Stephen King, and then I wrote a story, and I'm like, holy cow, because then my stories became so real, I began to see parts of how that could work, and I thought, no, that's way too dark. I'm not going there. And so I had experiences that were also intuitive as a child, and I knew that that world was real. I knew there was more to what we are than just what we can see, because I had my own experiences. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them, at least, were life-saving experiences. So this kitchen light was an automatic nightlight, which means it comes on and off given how much light it's exposed to. It started blinking when there was no shift in the light outside, and so I began to watch and see if anybody noticed, and see if it was just me. Mm-hmm. And it would do it in front of other people, too, but they didn't notice, because they weren't really paying any attention. And I thought, good grief, this is extraordinary. What the heck is going on? And that's when I decided, I called my mom, and she does a pendulum, dowsing. She'd been doing it for years, so she's refined it, and she doesn't jump to conclusions.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So I was like, Mom, help. And so she and my an aunt came over, and we did a session with the nightlight and watched it. And I watched it respond to the animals, and it would perform. It would blink and flicker for the animals as well. And if I would sit in a certain position, then it would blink and flicker. This thing was I was just so caught up in this when it first started happening. I would wake up 2 a.m. and see, and get to the end of the bed because I could see to the other room and see, is it blinking? Oh, yes, it's blinking. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And so it was cloud nine. It was cloud nine. But I figured out from the session that I would need to learn how to channel to bring it through. And I wasn't really aware that I could do that. And I had read books on channeling. I had had an encounter. My grandmother also helped me at one point, because when I tuned in a meditation session and said, am I connected? Are you here? And they said, we are here. And I'm like, we! Ah! So I shut it down.
Of course.
We!
That's it.
What?
Be careful. Be careful what you ask for. You might get it. That's what happens.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So when I heard that, I was like, okay, well, that's enough. I know. Uh-huh. Yeah, Grandma. And Grandma said, just go slow. Just go slow. Thank you, Grandma. But so since then, that we is my own chorus, my guardians, my guides, my helpers.
Uh-huh.
It isn't. So that's what came of that. But that was back in the 90s when I was first beginning to consciously try and put pieces of my puzzle together and develop my spiritual connection. So I explored. I did the tarot. I did runes. It's like a matches where I just throw the matches and see how the energy, how I read it.
Sure, yeah.
Each person, all of these people that are out here writing these tremendous books and leaving these tremendous breadcrumbs for us are doing their own thing, showing us we each have the way of connecting.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started with this, the night lights, then this other energy came in, mm-hmm. and I was able to do, and if you're familiar with the Seth books,
we're going to go there next. You're packing a lot in. Listen, I want to stay on this for a minute. I want to stay on the nightlight thing for a minute, because you've got this so many dimensions to your story, Wendy, but I want to stay with this, the idea of a nightlight being what we would call a conduit or impetus for this this journey you were about to take. You know, the phenomenon of electronics and electricity as a conduit for communication with the non-physical realm, it's well known in parapsychology research. Had you already been aware of this? Had you made this connection, or were you familiar with this aspect of research at the time this anomaly started to occur?
No.
Wow. Okay.
No.
So, okay.
No, I was pretty clueless at that point.
Really?
Well, it was 1997, and I really hadn't gotten into, even though my mom, I mean, if you listen to my interviews now, I'm going back and reconnecting dots and re-exploring and reinvestigating and reminding myself, oh my gosh, this stuff was already out here.
Uh-huh.
And even when I wrote the book, somebody said, well, if you're not familiar with this, then this is, you know, this phenomenon isn't exactly new. And you would go back to Madame Blavatsky.
That's right.
Blavatsky, and I had read, trying to think, I knew Edgar Cayce was there, and I'm also intuitive, so these promptings were being given to me all
mm-hmm.
along.
Okay.
It wasn't, I had read Ruth Montgomery, I did read Whitley Strieber, I wrote the Return of the Bird Tribes, Ken Carey. I had a lot of help, but as for the scientific research on it, I didn't really explore the research. I did want to be at one point a paranormal psychologist.
Did you really?
Or, wow. Yeah, but it was in L.A. and I couldn't get there. And it was really funny because I reconnected with Valerie Hunt, who was at one point, she was the leader of that I think department at one point. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know. But I didn't go that direction because it was too far
mm-hmm.
For me to make that leap. In the meantime, though, I did my own research, and when this Nightlight thing happened. Yes, it is electronic, and we're always, each of us as creators and in our own being, we have this electrical connection.
Absolutely.
The book, The Body Electric, is all about that.
That's right.
Barbara Brennan, she talks about it with her energy medicine.
Mm-hmm.
These things are available to us, but I didn't expect it was going to happen to me.
Of course. Well, that's always the case. And like I said, again, be careful what you ask for. And if you're really sincerely asking, Wendy, you are going to get those answers. And so, you know, you talk about in the book, one thing I love about the way you articulate your thoughts in this book, it's with such humility, it's with such a sense of reverence for this amazing thing we call reality that's so vast that admittedly we don't understand. And I love the way you were honest with yourself and ultimately with the readers in that process of, it's okay to not know. But furthermore, you had the courage to continue to explore, and it responded to you. I want to talk about how this kind of moved into a process called automatic writing. So you had the Nightlight was sort of the impetus, we'll say, if I'm understanding correctly. And then you kind of went into this process of automatic writing. Had this been something that you had explored prior to the Nightlight, or was it because of the Nightlight anomaly that got this started for you?
I think with that automatic writing, I remember doing something and writing in my journal. Before the Nightlights, I had written this little piece, What Will It Take to Shake Up Your World? How big a catastrophe
mm-hmm.
must happen before you are willing to re-examine your life? It was a paragraph like that, and it was probably in 91 or 92.
Mm-hmm.
And judge your progress by the nature of your catastrophes, because what happens with a catastrophe is we have to respond. There's no doubt, no question. Something has to change. And if we change before it gets to that level, it won't be quite so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, if we're not connected, or if we really have to redirect, that's when the catastrophe comes in. And so what they were saying, or what this message, this guidance for me at that point, was kind of a precursor and saying, you know, as you progress, you won't have to have these big upheavals. But even when it is an upheaval, understand something must change. And so not to look at it as a bad and a, you know, poor me, poor us, what all we've lost. But okay, something else is coming forward. Look for the light. Look for the growth. Look for the new. And it happens. It's happened throughout our history.
Absolutely.
There's so many beautiful pieces of our past that aren't any longer. They're gone. And they must have had the same feeling that we have when they lose that beautiful bit of creation that they've worked so hard to bring into our reality. And then in a monsoon, a typhoon, a tornado, a refreezing of the earth, where the dinosaurs say bye-bye, they have to go. And we're going to be in that way in ourselves in different processes throughout the world, depending on what each of us has drawn to our karma.
Mm-hmm.
But we all say goodbye eventually from this plane and go forward. And that was what they were saying, was judge your catastrophes and let them tell you how you are progressing in your own soul growth. And it became, for me, when my life went upside down and inside out from being transitioned out of a full-time radio career job,
mm-hmm.
How I had to find myself at the time, I thought, oh man, and then this appeared. I really wouldn't have had time for it, to explore it and investigate it, because it would have just been, oh, look, the light's flashing. I hope I wouldn't be that, but I can't say that I wouldn't have missed it, or I don't know what would have happened if I didn't have that free time.
Well, in this case, it seems like the upheaval, that being the shock of losing your job and wondering where to go, seemed to make room or clear the way for the next dimension of your journey, which, again, very, very observant of you, Wendy, and I agree with you. I think that, you know, I just gave an interview to Lilu, what did you call her, Mace?
Mace.
I remember that.
But she didn't correct me. That was very nice of her the entire
sweetheart.
Time. I was like, thank you, Lilu.
But, you know, in that interview, she had asked a similar question. Why is it that we have such a hard way to go? Why is it that when we think things are going so well and you put all this work into a given project and then boom, upheaval, challenge? And my answer simply to her was, I honestly don't know, but it seems that it has to be that way. And you kind of took it a step further by saying that when you have an upheaval, something must change, and or it's clearing the way for something to change, but you still have to get that signpost, that cue to do just that. And it seems like you really did that. I want to talk about the automatic writing more. You know, I find it interesting that there may be maybe a predisposition for those who are writers, either as a hobby, in your case it was journal writing, or by profession, to be proficient in this process that we call channeling. For those, you had mentioned the Seth material, I consider myself a student of the Seth material. I read it early on, probably in the late 80s, early 90s. Of course, the material channeled by Jane Roberts, who was a writer and a poet. And although she didn't channel via automatic writing, but verbally, of course, it was her husband, Rob Butts, that took notes, copious notes, she became a very proficient channel. And the material was absolutely astounding, and it still is to this day. Do you think there's a connection, Wendy, with those who are writers or who have a propensity for creative writing and channeling?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Part of it is because we've already done the work of getting the basics together. And if you've got the basics together, then you can kind of sit back and let it go into an autopilot, because your brain, your mind is already thinking in that kind of coherent manner that will create a story and know when to beginning, middle, and end, when to pause, when to embellish, when to pick up the pace. You have that context there that you can work. There's like a foundation or a blueprint. They have an easier way of connecting to us because our thoughts are already set out in a very, I think, an elegant way. I'm not trying to be egotistical. I'm trying to say there's a, like Brian Greene, the elegant universe.
Yes.
There's a pattern that we think in that is, I think, open to this kind of connection.
I see.
And I had to develop it. It wasn't when it first started. I had to and these guides came through to help me to point the right direction, or to say, the first thing I had to do was work on my breath. The guides who came in, this is a chorus I talked about earlier, because the energy isn't the same. The energy is different. It's a different being.
Mm-hmm.
And then my guides came forward to say, okay, now, because I was going to become a conscious channel. Well, I kept losing track. If I was writing, I had to focus so hard, I couldn't imagine trying to say it out loud, because I'd have to get my mind and my mouth to work with what I was getting that was coming in so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't keep up with it, and I'm thinking, how will I ever be able to get it out? There's too much. And that was when they started with, they told me prana. I had to look it up. These weren't my words.
You didn't know these words.
So, no, I wasn't. And they were saying the prana, and I'd heard of chi, but I didn't, this wasn't my area of expertise. So as a journalist, though, I knew how to look things up.
Yeah, right. I understand. Yeah, yeah.
So that was they came in. That's when my own guidance started coming in front and center and really helping me work through this. And I had had experiences with ghosts. I'd had experiences with other beings and just knowing that there was more out there and not being frightened by it. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't something where I had oh my gosh, I'm being taken over, blah blah blah. That's not even in the same ballpark.
Okay.
So there was no fear there. There was just okay, how do I make this work? What do I do next? What am I needing to address? And breath. So I laid down, I put the tape recorder on my stomach, and I practiced my to open up my whole chakra system.
I see. Breath is very integral in this process. That's interesting. It's not surprising, but this is what you were guided to do, that breath was absolutely, proper breathing was essential for the opening to channel, right?
And becoming fully grounded in your body.
Uh-huh.
Becoming fully grounded. Breath is a way of remembering that we are life. We are human.
Right.
And so to become fully grounded, then you become aware of being fully divine. So you're joining the two. You're joining this essence and form. And that was how it was relayed to me. The first step would be to, because you always come back to whenever you're out in the stuff I've read later with Monroe Institute, Monroe, and some of these other out-of-body type journeys and teachings and travels and Carlos Castaneda, which I was reading at the time, there's a way that you call yourself back to presence, and it's always to remember your physical body or to connect with the physical body, and breathing does that.
Breathing does that, and it's so ironic, Wendy, that it seems many in the New Age community, I think we're now getting to the point where we understand we have to be grounded, but for so long, everybody wanted to, they couldn't blast out of their heads quick enough. The goal was to escape the body or escape the planet, even through, even the term out of body experience implies that we're leaving. It's the opposite of being grounded, when in fact, and your friend and mine, William Buhlman, has said this, that it really, we're not out of body. We're more grounded in the body, but understanding that we can experience multi dimensions while being grounded. So I think that's a tip worth noting. Let's talk about the energy, capital T, capital E. Energy. This is what you affectionately named your, here's what I'm going to call this intelligence. I'm going to call this intelligence a partner. That's the impression that I got when I read this book. You think of guides or you think of discarnate entities that you are communicating with as somehow being way more intelligent, way more wise, way more clued in. And I noticed that in the dialogue, because you have an actual dialogue going on that you convey to the reader word for word, that the energy said, I want to work with you. I want this to be a mutual benefit. And immediately I got the word joint venture. But this intelligence wanted to learn from you as much as you from the intelligence. Joint venture, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's a collaboration.
Yeah.
Because there was no sense of worship me or I know more. It was let's learn how we can be together. And basically how receptive I was and able to pick up on the thoughts without convoluting them or making them something that that I was projecting rather than receiving. Because we do that. In our own sense of worth and self and ego, we want something to be, and sometimes very grandiose and very, oh my gosh, look at this, I've got to get on a pedestal and tell the entire world because this is so important. It was like, no, just learn who you are and that'll be enough. And that process was, to me, very exciting. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, this is so amazing that I can do this and that there is another energy, entity, being, sentient awareness that is connecting and giving me the time of day and the information that is helpful and not telling me how to use it or what to do with it, but just to explore
right. And
free myself from the limitations we have about what a body should do and what a person should do and what success is and how you're supposed to use your time to allowing that maybe we don't know everything just yet.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. You think? Wow. Again, I want to reiterate the humility that comes through, Wendy, as you're writing this book. And really, the fact that at times you were very incredulous about what was going on. And I can imagine, I mean, look, you and I, we both come from the broadcasting biz, and now we've been blessed to hone our genre so that we're talking about these very things. And so we are, I would say we have a predisposition to these experiences, or so you would think. And yet, whenever something happens, you and I both have had sets of experiences that have happened, you still have to say, really? Is this really happening? And it's a little bit frustrating. I mean, we talk about the animal reincarnation situation, and I still question. And it's not that I want it to not be true, but it just goes to show you, we just don't know everything, how little we know. That came through with you as well. You are so, I think, so blessed that you had a confidant in this journey, your mother. That's I was really touched by that, because, you know, people have these experiences and they just don't know where to turn, you know, just to kind of download and really share. Extraordinary things are happening. Many people are loath to talk about this, but you had your mom. She played a significant role and was a confidant. Talk about that a little bit.
That really was a sanity saver. Because when this is happening and it blows everything you think about reality out the door, then being able to at least have somebody to bounce off of and say, well, what do you think? And am I doing this correctly? Or how does this sound? Can you believe this? And whether she believed it or not, it had more to do with just being supportive and willing to listen. And in the end, I mean, what I say is she was wholeheartedly supportive. She didn't discourage me. She did just look forward to our conversations. And for a time, it was very intense as this was all starting, and I was upside down with it. And she couldn't talk about it either, because in her career in education, she was in a very, you know, in a high-profile position. And this, so the things were, I'm experimenting with and exploring aren't the topic of your normal evening dinner,
right,
or your regular going out to see a movie event. It's like okie doke.
Wow. And yet this was a big part of her life as well. You said that she seemed to be somewhat adept at dowsing and other things. So it seems like you kind of grew up in a family that really nurtured, very much like myself. And my mother, by the way, was also an educator and didn't talk about this to her high school students. But certainly we sat around the table and we discussed. My father as well, who was an MIT scientist, both left brain folks. That is a blessing, Wendy, because when you're having these absolutely, I mean, you had a bit of context, so that too was important. You had done some reading, but it did, this obviously was a next dimension for you.
When I was about 11 years old, and I had had, as a kid, I had an imaginary friend who was with me until I said to Mom, Hegel flew out the window, and that was it. But I talked constantly about this friend until that was it, and I never spoke of him again. I had about 11 or 10, I had an experience, a little girl stayed overnight, and she said, do you accept the Holy Spirit? And I thought, well, why not? Why wouldn't you? This is all, you know, this is good stuff. And, well, yeah, of course. And at that moment, my entire body glowed. I called it the glowworm experience, because I just felt with this tremendous warmth from head to toe, and I just felt enveloped. I'm like, wow. And so I told her, and she's like, no. Because I said, did you feel that? And she's no. And we didn't ever talk about it again. It scared her.
Did she see anything in you?
No. She had, there was, it really, that changed our friendship a little bit. I also saw ghosts at her house, so, you know, there might have been another thing. I didn't tell her about that, because I already learned my lesson.
Right. Wow.
But that part of it, so I did have some other things going on where I wasn't afraid of this kind of exploring and searching and things that were coming through.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want to say that, too, is there's, I had a very strong sense of God and a sense of a greater protection, awareness, benevolence that is here for all of us when we open our hearts and when we are willing to be vulnerable and willing to just say, I'm available. What can you show me? What can I do? How can I share? How can I bring a greater awareness into being in the most positive way and for the highest good?
Mm-hmm.
So those were the kinds of thoughts that I had with me from childhood. And at one point, we were in a place where we were isolated, and I was with a friend, and it could have been a negative. And these two young men came to. We were in the creek playing, and they were supposedly going to go visit a relative further down in a pasture. And I had this immediate, as soon as they left our site, I had this immediate out loud voice that I could hear that my friend couldn't, that said, run. And I'm like, oh. And I knew right then there was no question. So I told her to get out of the water, and she's looking at me, thinking I'm playing, thinking it's a joke. I said, run, I'm leaving. And, mm-hmm. and then she followed me, and her eyes were, you know, huge, wondering what the heck was going on. Well, it was in a very short time, a few minutes, long enough for us to stand behind the cabin. She's there waiting with me as we watch these guys go by in their truck, trying to figure out where we went. Now, at that point, this is a horror film moment, when she either sneezed or choked or did something out loud, and I was ready to deck her. If they don't get us, I will get you.
Oh, boy.
Okay,
oh,
and
scary.
But because the rocks on the gravel were making noise,
yeah,
they couldn't have heard her make them. But I was just, here, I saved your life, and what did you do? Okay, so, but that was those are my guides. That's my chorus. That's my gang, my group, my spirit companions who are helping me through this. And I knew when I heard that voice, and there had been other times, but that one I can share. And it's just the thing of when those things are real for us, we don't have to ask somebody else to validate them.
That's right.
We just say, I know it, and it's okay. You don't
yeah.
have to know it. And that's what this is all about. That's why this book is there. It's like, this is a way that I have brought it through, and I have this nightlight that I have in my office. It's in front of me. It's supposed to be on right now. It's off because it's participating in a different way. And it's so funny because when I ask, well, why do you stay off? And it's to conserve the light.
This is what you hear? You actually?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yes. Well, because it's a telepathy.
Yeah.
They're connecting, and that's how you get the channeling. It's like a telepathic type of, it's in there, and it may come too fast, so as you try to get it out, you have to relax and get out of the ego state of trying to make it make sense. You have to just let it come through and then go back and decide, well, does this make sense?
Right, exactly, after the fact.
And sometimes
yeah.
it won't make sense until 2 or 3 months later. Something
right.
will happen, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's what was being talked about, because the time isn't the same as ours.
I noticed in the dialogue in your book, Wendy, where the energy, and by the way, just to reiterate, audience, this is what she has named this, the energy, is scolding you on occasion, because this energy knows that you're so wanting to process. You're getting this stream of consciousness, we'll say, that you are then, I'm assuming you're typing, doing the automatic writing via a typewriter. And you're looking at the things that are coming from the stream and wanting to sort of analyze it. And the energy is saying, no, 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 just write down what I say and you'll have time to do this later. I thought that was so, it was almost like this energy was teaching you, a teacher, on how to be a more effective channel at the same time you had this one-on-one relationship.
It was a coach, yeah, yeah, because I wanted to organize everything.
Right.
And the deal is with our thoughts and our energy, these other beings who are with us, they see so much more of our total awareness that it's not like you and I having a linear conversation where we have to process and kind of regurgitate and then, you know, throw it back in our own psyche, our thoughts and how it should sound and try and... It's I think much more efficient the way they connect.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
they don't have to regurgitate anything. They don't have to try and extrapolate or give us an analogy. Well, give themselves an analogy. What they do is they just set it out for us, and if we're capable and if we're willing to be, I think humble is probably a good word, then we can learn more. But when we start saying, well, I know this, or but this is already true, or that's incorrect information, some of the information that I channeled in the book actually was a different line of thinking at the time that I put it down. And there's some information about King Tut. There's some information that was some science information about the black holes. There's some several things in there that when I wrote that in 1997 and it came through, that information didn't exist. And so it was, so to me, I didn't get, some of it didn't get corroborated for 10 years. And I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. Oh my gosh. One of them is like the Bose-Einstein condensate.
Now that's mind blowing. Let me just stop you there, Wendy, because you know, in the first part of your book, and I was going to say this must be in part two of the book, because it clearly the material seems to be taking on a more almost scholarly, scientific stream of information. And I know that in the first part of the book, you know, you were really questioning, is this coming from me? Is it coming from my higher self? Or, you know, at some point. But when you're starting to get information so complex that you know you had absolutely no context for before, there had to be absolutely no question in your mind that this was coming from another level of intelligence.
I knew it wasn't me, because I didn't think that way. And when people have said, well, you wrote it, so you must have been thinking it, you know, ta-da, you're trumped. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great philosophy and a great idea, but as my own, shall I say, in my own defense, I have to have a way of explaining things that comes from my frame of reference. I don't have the scientific background that would allow me to give the proper names to certain things. I don't have the cosmology and the information on astrology that would have given me even the idea, the concept that some of these things were going to be happening. But what they were just saying to me, go back to the basics and come out again, because you guys, you're missing things at the very basic level of your being that will fill in the blanks, and that some of your history is still hidden, and it will come to light. And when that comes to light, then a lot of the things you believe about your own world are going to change. All of this stuff isn't really ground-shaking, now that I know, or earth-shattering, because other people have brought the same things and are bringing it through.
Sure.
But coming through me and my own personal thing, it was like, wow.
I know, it had to be really something. And even something to see that it's being, not reiterated, but it's being corroborated through this later research, which is even more proof putting to you that this was indeed coming from a source somewhat unfamiliar to you, or not from you. That's really something.
Well, the other thing too, the energy did was to say, don't give us a name.
Don't give us a name. I know, we love labels, don't we?
Right, because then as soon as I do it, and the funny thing was, this was going on at the same time that Abraham information was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And people kept saying, you want to go see a thing with Abraham? You want to go, come on, let's go. I'm like, no. I'm getting the very same kind of information, and I'm doing it in a very similar manner. And each of us, and Neil Donald Walsh was also doing his conversations with God. And so these things were happening as I'm getting my information. But the difference was that I had this beautiful, and I still have this light, this electrical connection. And it would tell me, now look at you, look at yourself. And so I get under the sheet and look at myself. And I'm older than, you know, than a 7-year-old. And I'm still doing this. And where am I? Am I glowing? Am I glowing? Am I illuminated? Okay, well, sometimes, you know, you just have to see.
Right.
But the light is. And the light, so when I take it on vacation, when I take, you know, I plug it in when I go somewhere, this wonderful interaction is just there now. And it's 24/7 because it's my affirmation, my proof, my validation that we are never alone.
Never alone.
And
wow.
By writing this down and putting it in a book, it gave me a concrete validation of my experience.
Wow.
So that was really what it was more about, that and wanting to share it and saying it's out there, but knowing there's not enough proof for anything like this until the person is ready to say, what if?
What if?
Mm-hmm. And then the proof might come from within them.
Exactly.
No science, no math, no periodic timetable, nothing. Because once you've had, and the people who are having these extraordinary encounters with other intelligences and beings, and they've had them throughout history, we're just at a point in our timeline where we can talk about it without feeling like we're going to be persecuted, which is a really nice place to be.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're having these experiences, they can't prove it to anybody else. That's just the way it works. So you have to become more solid in who you are.
That's right.
To know your own truth.
That's right. I think you and I talked about that on your show, about the whole obsession with finding proof in that it's an external validation. It has to be replicated or whatever form it may come in. And I think you and I agree. And I think I had said to you, I have never been too concerned about proving anything to others. It's really about embodying the experience myself and knowing without the need to even believe anymore. We still have a ways to go there, but you know, I don't know that there will ever be any scientific instrumentation as we know it to measure the vastness of experience such as what you're having. So yeah, it's a very subjective journey, I think.
Yeah, it is. We come in here in this one little body and we leave in the same little body, but that isn't us. That's just our little tourist trap.
That's
our little tourist trap. The tourist carriage. Well, the thing that they gave me was that I had to learn how to channel. And I wanted to be, because there are people who are unconscious and they allow themselves to be joined with another entity or being that has a definite persona and is much more charismatic and will put on a beautiful display. But I didn't want to have to not know what was going on while I was in my body, because I figured I need to be responsible for this, and I could do that better, to my way of thinking, if I just became a conscious channel.
Well, I love that. I love that you brought that up, Wendy. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about that in terms of, you know, there's been a lot of debate around the ethics, I should say, of channeling, maybe so in more recent years, and yet it's a burgeoning subject matter. What are your thoughts about, let's say somebody wants to get involved in the channeling process, whether it be a conscious channel or, you know, who comes to mind is Daryl Anka, who channels Bashar, whom I know quite well, actually, who appears to be in somewhat of an altered state. And yet I've talked to him and he says he feels like he is still somewhat there, although there's a slightly different process going on there. But without digressing too much, I guess my question first is, the ethics of channeling. Some say we need to stay away from it. Others say it's part of our journey and we should be communicating with these other entities. Were you concerned about not so much the ethics, but channeling the wrong type of energy?
No, because I wasn't at that point. I read Sanaya Roman and Dwayne Packer, their information opening the channel probably back in 87 or 89, whatever. So I knew, you know, I had a better idea of, basically we attract to ourselves what we are putting out.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to control somebody, I will get something, an energy that is reciprocating that kind of need to control. If I have a very strong sense of ego where I need to be on stage and in front of everybody, then I will attract an entity or a being that will need that same desire. What I'm saying is we have similar frequencies. And I knew that what I was attracting, because I didn't have any expectation and I wasn't looking for some grandiose outlet or stage performance, I was just looking for reality. What's real? What is this? Is this, you know, is there more? And so I had a different energy that I was bringing to it. I had already had experiences where I saw things that were negative and were ghosts and that were, I had an idea that I had already put that off. Like when I was writing the Stephen King type stuff when I was in eighth grade, I said, no, I'm not going to go there.
Mm.
That's a negative output, and what it does is it produces in other people negative outputs and gives them ideas, negative types of basically inspiration that they might not have had if somebody hadn't written about it.
Wow. Very wise of you. My goodness. That is really something. Okay. Well said. Well said. And I think that's, and still, obviously, it's up to the individual who may be pondering, not just the legitimacy of channeling, but the ethics involved. I think the well said. And essentially, what I think you're saying is that what you put out is what you get back. We're literally, or what we get back is literally a mirror of the internal, whether it be conscious or even subconscious motivation. So that's really important. You know, you keep talking about you've had these sort of ghostly encounters in the past. I'd love to hear one of them, if you wouldn't mind sharing, if you could. Everybody loves a good ghost story, right?
Oh, yeah, I know. And as a kid, yeah, that was a campfire ghost stories, a whole nine yards, yeah, until they happen to you, and then you're like, oh, crud.
I know. Can you tell us what?
Well, the one I talked about with the little girl, I'll tell you that one first. That's real simple, and then there's another one that has more involvement. But that one, when I went to her house, we were in, the typical sleepover, and I probably, again, I'm about between the ages of nine and twelve, depending on, because I had to figure out what house I was in. So, younger, and the door, her bedroom door, opened up just a fraction, just a little bit, and there was a hand on the door checking, and I thought, okay, well, that's her dad checking in on us. And we were all supposed to be asleep, and, the lights are supposed to be out, but there was a light in the hallway, so I could see the arm lit up. And that next morning, in the conversation and all, I saw the hand that was on the door, and the arm that I saw on the door was full of all this hair, very, very hairy, masculine arm, older, and her dad didn't look like that at all. And they had also, they were supposed to have been in bed. And that was, so I knew right then, because of, the other things as a kid, that was a ghost, that I had seen a ghost. So that was the younger, so that gives you an idea from that younger time in my life, I had these awarenesses. Mm-hmm. And it didn't frighten me, it just, oh, okay, the house has a ghost, got it. And I wasn't curious, what kind of ghost, who is it? I didn't care.
Right.
As an older, now it's like, well, who is it? Well, can we help? Is there something I can do to say you don't need to be here? If this is not in line with your soul path, you can go forward. Well, okay. About mid-1994, we were living in a duplex, and we had bought this as an investment property, so we live in one side and somebody else lives in the other. We got a really good deal on it, like about $20,000 less than you would normally pay for something like that. Uh-huh. And we're in it, and it was the weirdest thing. I would go to bed at night, and I would choke. I would start choking. I'm thinking, dang it, what am I doing? I'm forgetting how to breathe. I'm just forgetting how to breathe. So I propped myself up with a pillow. And then I would hear a little chime. There's no chimes in the room. Beside the bed, I'd hear a chime. Another time, I was laying down. I worked the odd shifts, so I was laying down in the middle of the day. My toe at the very end of the bed, I felt something, and then I felt my toe, like somebody put a finger on it and bent my toe down. I'm like, okay, I felt that. Another thing with that, we had a set of bookshelves. And this has happened at more than one house, which I thought is they really like bookshelves. The bookshelves in the other room fell off the wall on my head, hit me on the head, one of the shelves. But there was this beautiful pickle jar that was an antique pickle jar, a very cherished treasure, was not mine, was my mother-in-law's that had been given to my ex-husband. And I thought, oh, no, it didn't break that.
Mm-hmm.
But it hit me on the head, and all the books fell on the floor.
Wow.
But it was basically, that's like, wake up!
Right.
All right. The guy who had an apartment before, we finally found out from the people next door, oh, you didn't know? Well, yeah, he committed suicide. So this was, and he was meticulous. He was absolutely meticulous. The other little deal about that was that when I left the house for 10 minutes, I called and asked my husband, I said, did you come home for lunch? When I came back home, we had a little entertainment unit that was magnetic, with glass magnetic doors that's supposed to be shut, and the only way you can open it is if you physically press on it to disconnect it from the magnetic.
I know. I can see exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Well, they were both perfectly in line, open about 3 to 5 inches, perfectly in line with, and they had been opened. So it was doing all, and it scared my cat. We went on vacation, and poor little Huey was in the hall with a big white puff of fur where he had nested because he was too frightened to go into the bedrooms or anywhere else in the place. And that was really, that was what irritated me, because our pets see these things.
Absolutely.
They tell us. They see. They know. They have a different ability, and I do believe it's something in their range of sight that they're able to pick up on the infrared or the, you know, there's another element. Because I've had them stare straight at whatever is manifesting, and I haven't been able to see it.
Yeah, I know. Huey. I want to talk about Huey. Let's talk about Huey. I'm glad you brought up that kitty. Wow. Uh-oh. Well, first, thanks for sharing those stories. I mean, we could have a whole show on the anomaly. Ghost stories are as old as mankind, ghosts and the stories that accompany them. But
you want the clincher?
I forgot
about it till just now when you're saying, because this plays into the channeling of, with the thing I said, which I didn't know I could
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. Give it to me.
Okay. The choking thing was followed by one morning I woke up and I was gurgling and I'm going, ooh. And I thought, this is what a ghost sounds like. This is what it, and I realized at that point that that's when I realized he was trying to come through me. He was trying to come through. He was trying to get help. He wasn't trying to hurt me or harm me in any way. But in trying to wake me up from my stupor, to get me out of lockstep, he was doing all those things to say, I don't want to be here.
Isn't that something?
So that's what I learned. And that's before, that was, you know, mid-90s. That's before this started. But that's just to say that sometimes, you don't even have to be a channel. You have to just be available. And that's why I deal with certain people who've had ghost experiences and ghost encounters, because I know some of the things that are very much an indication that those stories are real.
Yeah. I have so many thoughts running through my head right now, Wendy, in terms of your seeming to have a propensity for these types of experience was almost like, again, every little chapter in our lives, i.e. the ghost encounters, if you will, were sort of a framework for setting up the next level of sophistication of communicating with the spirit realm. That's fascinating. I want to talk about Huey because the time's running out. Got to talk about Huey. I love your story. We talked about my clover paws. I love what you talk about your cat and this day. I believe you had a couple of little kitties at the time, but all of a sudden this incredible sense of grief came over you. And, you know, thinking about your, was it recently deceased cat, but you got a message that seemed to put a salve on the grief. Tell us about that.
Oh, this is something that I wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. I had a really wonderful connection with Huey. And so he was in my dreams at night, and in my daytime, he was very much a companion. And I was kind of lost. And what happened was I had been used to having he would come be with me. And these two kitties, Riley and Rowdy, were wonderful, but they loved each other. And I have to say, I have never seen a more perfect relationship between a male and female being. Huh. They modeled it, and they were just, she'd get dirty and he'd have to clean her, and he loved it.
I love it. How precious.
And she was so perfectly feminine. But what they told me, because I was in the midst of really, really hurting and feeling grief, and it had been a year, but this is when that came through on transmigration of soul.
Transmigration of soul, yeah.
And I didn't even know, I hadn't thought about that you aren't just, when you incarnate, you don't have to be the same thing every time. That we come through and we can be anything we want from spirit. We can be a blade of grass. We can be a mountain. We can be a tree. We can be a dog. We can be anything. And saying that even though I loved him and desperately missed him, that I had to let go so he could continue to become, and I could too, and that he would be with me. But they compared it to like somebody being on the phone and just not letting the phone disconnect. You have to let them go, and then they come back. And he did. He did come back at one point to let me know that everything was okay. And that it was amazing because the dream represented the two kittens and I in a basement. And I couldn't find a way out. I couldn't find the door. I needed something. And then he came and he opened up the door. And we came out. And I said, I knew you would come.
Wow. And didn't
and
you...
And that was just a release.
A release. So yeah. Important. This is how amazingly healing a process that we call channeling. There are other names for it, but how amazing and transformational something like this can be. This is true spiritual work that you're doing, Wendy. True spiritual work. And you continue with it, yes? Are you still actively?
Oh, yeah. Well, it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away. It makes the ordinary extraordinary.
Most certainly. That's it.
It's just... You realize all of these moments we have, every single one is a diamond. Every single one is a pearl. Every single one is excruciatingly beautiful.
I love it. Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. What if somebody listening to this conversation, listening to this interview, wanted to explore channeling for a benevolent and unconditional curiosity, not more than curiosity, obviously, but as a mission, as part of their spiritual work. How would you suggest they get started? Just a little question.
Okay. Well, in the book, I give you a way of doing the meditation and setting aside, you know, getting your own thoughts separate. It does help to know your own psychology and to know your own reasons for doing this and what you expect out of it, because that's what you're going to get if you... You know, you have to get through those hurdles and allow that knee-skinning phase to happen, because there's just as much positive with this as there is a learning curve. And so just accept that you're going to be learning, and don't ask for it to be earth-shattering. Just ask for it to be helpful. And remember, help comes in all forms.
Absolutely.
Okay, it can be a lift up or a kick in the... in the pants.
yeah, you're absolutely right. That's where we started out talking about that. Yeah. Okay.
So you do that, and then, like my grandma said, just take it slow. Take it slow.
Should everyone pursue something like this? But if, I think you really answered the question. We must have a solid psychology and really understand ourselves first and foremost. But I just feel that it's something that we may be moving toward in any case. You know, they say some people believe that there has been a quarantine on this planet. In other words, there are so many infinite, perhaps, species and energies and higher forms or different forms. I don't like to use low or high, but different forms of intelligence that we have been conditioned away from. But maybe that veil is thinning such that communications will become more regular, more readily accepted. And so I guess that's kind of what's in the back of my mind as I'm thinking, you know, perhaps more people, as long as there's a solid foundation, a solid motivation, a benevolent motivation to pursue some aspect of this. I find it intriguing.
Well, I think part of it is it's that view of whether it's mainstream, making it acceptable. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be popular. It doesn't have to be mainstream. It has to be right for you. Each person has to determine, because you don't have to channel to connect with your own higher essence, your own spirit guides, your own form of source. You don't have to channel. You just have to say, I love being here. What can you show me about love? And then it all comes. It's easy as that. We learn about love and all these different ways of being, of seeing, of learning, of doing, of living, of being human right now. And then when we're done with this, we'll go on with something else, but we will still have the love. It doesn't end. It just diversifies.
It diversifies, absolutely. Love. That's all it is. Yeah. It may sound...
But it's just, you know, even things that are negative, there's still that love essence of, this is how it does work, this is how it doesn't work. We explore. And my dogs are now exploring New York.
They're saying yes. Wendy, you're absolutely right. They're agreeing with you.
I wish I could say that. We have our own little... We have terms for this.
Tell me, Wendy, what's next for you? Well, we know what's next. What's next is Conscious Living with Wendy Garrett, Empowerment Radio. I love it. But what else are you working on?
Well, I do want to go back and revisit the book and bring in some more information about the things that are also coming out. I've had other experiences since then, and it does deal with expanding our views of what's available and what we are, I guess, the ET connection that we would call it, which is why they didn't want me to give it a name, because that's also part of our experience, and it's an amazing, amazing place to explore, and those are my encounters that are coming next.
I love it. Talking to Nightlights, Channeling Energy and Awakening for Spiritual Insight by Wendy Garrett. This was released, I believe, in 2007, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, I just became familiar with it after talking to you, and I'm so glad I did. I so encourage everyone to get this book, read it. It's available where? It's available on Amazon, I know. Where else is it available, Wendy?
Actually, anywhere. It's internet, so you can do a download print on demand.
Okay.
I did it through iUniverse. You can do that, but Amazon's is a good place to go as any. It's got a little bio background. You can kind of dig into it first.
And it's a relatively short read, short but packed with lots of information. So
I believe in being concise.
And I think you had mentioned something about short attention spans, and
yeah.
So it's perfect. I don't think we need 400, 500, 600 page books to get profound messages across. You certainly accomplished that in this book, Wendy, and you're accomplishing it every day with the beautiful work that you do. I want to thank you. Thank you for adding to the tapestry of what we call alternative media. I salute you coming from our old stomping ground of mainstream into, I think this is a little bit more exciting, actually, alternative media, talking about good stuff and the stuff that matters. Wendy Garrett, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's wonderful to connect. I appreciate it.
Likewise, and my pleasure. Take care now. As Wendy so aptly puts it, when you have an upheaval in your life, something must change. In her case, the upheaval was being uprooted from a broadcasting job that she loved. But what she soon learned was that opening provided a path to change her world in ways that would send her on a magnificent journey like no other. Thank you for listening to this episode of Conscious Inquiry. Until next time, I'm Alexis Brooks.